Once again, we gather together to offer our worship to God, hoping that He will find that acceptable. And I hope that I can present some lessons that will be beneficial to you. And I'm planning to do that because I'm going to preach the Word of God. That's what I like to do. That's all I want to do. That's all I like to do. That's all I will do. So, I want to begin by pointing out that lust and temptation are the opposite sides of the same coin, in a way. Lust is internal, and temptation is external. The devil uses desires that we already have, fans them into flame, and moves us to sin. That's the way he does it. Sometimes our passions become, our desires become passions that we already have. And we have to be on guard about these things. So the devil uses desires we already have, fans them in the flame, and moves us to sin. Sometimes our desires become passions that are ever burning, ready to burst into fire. Colossians 3 and verse 5. And I don't preach any throwaway lessons. So I want you to heed this. Because I don't know what your circumstances are, but I know that in an audience of this size, there is going to be somebody that is having some problems, such as I'm going to talk about today. If we do not, so I say, if you and I do not bring our desires under control, and if we do not learn to resist the devil, then unmeasured disasters await us, both in this world and in the next. I have had a lot of experience dealing with people that, both myself and with others that were struggling with desires. They needed to get them under control. So I'm telling you, you need to be careful about this. If you do not bring your desires under control, then unmeasured disasters await you in this life and in the life to come. And I'm going to use the example of Amnon, but in a minute I'll talk about that. What I want to say is that a lot of times you may be struggling with a problem. You may be struggling with something that gives you a problem. You may be struggling with a temptation that really bothers you. You have trouble dealing with it. Now, I leave that up to you, but I want you to think about that. Are you having trouble with desires that you find difficult to suppress, difficult to control? That's what we're going to talk about today. So I want to consider the case of Amnon, which begins in 2 Samuel 13. So that's the story that I'm going to use. Amnon was the oldest son of David. He was obsessed with the thought of his beautiful sister Tamar. And it turned out that apparently that was all Amnon could think about. He was obsessed with the thought of that beautiful sister Tamar. And he allowed himself to want what he could not have, what he could not lawfully have. And he continued to do that until he made himself sick. And again, surely nobody here is going to do that. I don't assume anything. So there may be some here. We're having a problem with that. What I want to bid you do is think about that and get it under control. That is one of the purposes of the lesson today. So Amnon wanted Tamar for himself, and he allowed himself to want what he could not have until it made him sick. Amnon was the oldest son of David. And so he lived apart from David in his own house. But as he looked at this beautiful sister Tamar, who was the half-sister of Absalom, Absalom was a fine-looking man, so it's not surprising that Tamar was a fine-looking young woman. So he thought about Tamar. And the problem he could not figure out was how he's going to have his way with Tamar. And it's an awful thing he wanted to do. So the problem was he could not figure out how to have his way with Tamar. There is no record of his seeking any help. He had a cousin named Jonadab. And so Jonadab was looking at cousin Amnon. And he said, "Amnon, now what's going on here? You're not your normal self. What's the problem here?" And Amnon said, "I'm in love. I think a better word would have been, I'm in lust. I think that's exactly what it was. I'm in lust with my sister Tamar. And I cannot figure out how to get to her." It was an awful thing that he contemplated. "I cannot figure out how to have my way with her." But he did not go to Jonadab and said, "Jonadab, listen, I'm really having a problem and I need some help." He didn't do that. There is no record of his doing that at all. Now, Jonadab was a kind of fella, and I won't go through all that he did, but he knew better. And he could have offered some help. I don't know if he would have or not. But Amnon did not even ask him. Instead, Amnon cultivated this desire. He cultivated this desire. The problem should have been how he could cleanse his mind. Cleanse his mind. Sometimes temptation will hit us broadside. Now we can either do like David did and say, "You know, I'm going to play with this a little bit. I'm going to find out what her name is," as he did Bathsheba. And even when he finds out the name of Bathsheba, "You know, she's such a beautiful woman. I think I'm going to have her come." And he went on and went on with it. So that's what Amnon did. He could have done something about it. He could have said, "Jonadab, I need some help because I have the wrong thoughts about my sister." But he didn't do that. Now, it's a sad thing, and I want you to understand, I have seen this same thing happen to many people. It can happen to you. I don't care who you are. It can happen to you. And the worst thing is, "Oh, that could never happen to me." You're setting yourself up for a fall. You need to be on guard. An obsession is like water. It seeks for an outlet, for expression. An obsession gets stronger and stronger until finally it finds a weakness in what confines it, and it bursts forth. That's exactly what happens. You need to be real careful. So I want to notice now what happened to Amnon when he gave way to his lust. And let me go ahead and say a little bit further. When David went, what Jonadab said, "Make out like you're sick and let your dad come and visit you. And when he comes and sees you sick and so on," and he says, "Well, what can I do for you, Amnon?" "Well, it would make me feel better if my sister Tamar came and helped me out." Now, this was all a plot, a filthy plot. So he did that. So his father came. And so his father said, okay, you're sick. Okay, so said, can Tamar come and help me, minister unto me? And so David went and told Tamar, go to your brother's house, go to Amnon's house, and do some things for him. Now she baked some stuff, poured it out, got ready. Now at that point, Amnon said, all the men leave the house. Now, you should have suspected something or other. All the men leave the house. And so then he told Tamar, I'll tell you what, bring it in here. And essentially, it was like a bedroom. Bring it in here. So she went in there, all thinking in her honesty, she thought everything was going to be all right. And then Amnon seized her. And he said, come lie with me, my sister. She said, no, Amnon, don't do this. This is the terrible thing. But he went ahead anyhow, forced her. And when he had done that, he could not stand the sight of her anymore. I mean, he was through with her. I'm through with you. He had a servant. He said, put her out of the door. Put her out the door, on the street. I'm through with her. And so, I feel so sorry for Tamar, because what he did was ruin Tamar. He ruined her life. So, Amnon hated Tamar as soon as he had assaulted her. So the first thing then was Amnon's own defilement. So look at, there's a chain of events that I want you to be aware of. First of all, Amnon's own defilement. And then Tamar's ruin. He just ruined her life. And then after about 2 years, Absalom waited. He bided his time until he could get Amnon where he wanted him. So he told his servants to plan to assassinate Amnon. And so at a sheep shearing, they were ready. So they assassinated him. So the next result, we say, is Amnon's own death. Now then, the chain continues. And it's a long chain. Because now what had Absalom done? You see, he had slain his brother. Do you realize this is a chain of events? And the chain begins with Amnon and his defilement, his own defilement, and Tamar's ruin, and then Amnon's death, Absalom's murder of a brother, and then Absalom has to go up to his grandfather, Geshur, which is a small kingdom up there. So he went up there, and so for a while he could not come home. So Absalom's exile. See, all of this is the same basic event that got it all started. So now Absalom is living in exile with his grandfather. After a while, Joab kind of worked things out to bring Absalom back home. When he got back home, then he said, well, I don't love my father anymore. I don't think he loves me anymore. I'm going to do something about this. So he decided to rebel against David. So he created a rebellion, underhanded, had people involved that didn't know what was going on, and led the rebellion against David. So he rebelled against David, caused his father all kinds of suffering and everything like that. And then when the battle occurred, the forces of David and the forces of Absalom got together, and Absalom was killed. Do you all see that the chain that began with Amnon continues? It continues. So it resulted in Absalom's death. And then in that battle, there were thousands of men who died. You see that? Really, it's astounding how far that went. Now, I want to ask, in my mind, I say, where was David here? What was he doing? Why did he not take a hand in this? And I don't know exactly. But I like to think that David might have said, well, I really need to talk with Amnon. I need to clear some things up with him. I hear he's having feelings about Tamar, and I think I'll talk with him. Now, I imagine that David would have said, he would have thought, if I talk with Amnon about Tamar, and I say, why are you doing this? I have an idea he might have said, well, Dad, I'm just following your example. You see that? Now, one of the things I want to tell all of you is, men or women, but especially a man, because as a father, you need to be aware of your family. You need to be aware of the results of your conduct with your family. You can cause untold problems when you don't conduct yourself as you should. So men, I want to tell you, you conduct yourself as you should. Women, of course, need to conduct themselves as they can too. But this story involves a man, Amnon. So I'm stressing that. So you need to understand that. Make sure, because your deeds can have terrible consequences for your family. Do you understand that? Do you accept that? Do you grasp that? Don't let that go by you. Now, perhaps the most common excuse for lust and obsession is, I can't help it. Oh, wow. I can't help it. Now, I want to talk to you about that a moment. Cain and Abel offered sacrifices. Cain offered of the fruit of the field, and Abel offered his his firstlings and things like that. So God did not accept Cain's sacrifice. And God could look at Cain and know how he felt about that. His countenance was fallen. When I see people sometimes I see a little child, and the countenance is fallen. It's almost like the face is drooping. It looks like their face is melting a little bit. So God came and he saw Cain. And Cain, what's wrong? Well, you've accepted Abel's sacrifice. You haven't accepted mine. And God said, now listen, Cain. If you've done well, will not your countenance be lifted up? But if not, you need to be careful, because sin is crouching at your door, or couching at your door. Both terms are used. Like a lion, sin is crouching at your door, ready to spring on you. And then God said, in the American Standard, and also the King James, do thou rule over it. Do thou rule over it. Now, I find that interesting. That's an interesting statement to me. And I taught a fifth grade class years ago. And I had a young student. She was a fifth grader. And I said, what does do thou rule over it? This kind of a antiquated statement. Do thou rule over it. What does that mean? And this little girl, fifth grader, I'll always remember what she said. As I asked, what does that mean? Deal with it. See? That's exactly right. She was exactly right. You deal with it. And my brothers and sisters, when we are confronted with temptation, we're going to need to deal with it. You're going to need to get that put to rest. Stop it. And you know the way to do that? You have to learn that whatever it is you're lusting after, make it so that it doesn't even appeal to you anymore. That's a job. But that's the secret to resisting. As long as you allow yourself to go on, well, I'm not going to actually give in to it, but I'm enjoying the temptation. You know what will happen to you? You will fall. That's exactly what will happen to you. So don't do that. So deal with it. That's what God told Cain. You deal with it. And there are a number of other illustrations that I want to use just briefly. If God did not expect men to control their desires, He would not have commanded the Israelites not to covet their neighbor's wife. He wouldn't have said that. And what about, could David help what he did with Bathsheba? 2 Samuel 11. He could have. Absolutely he could have. And I think about David as he stumbled and fell. Now, I can't say that he sinned in that he caught a glimpse of Bathsheba. There are things that might be involved, but just on the face of it, I can't say that he did wrong in just seeing her. But then he should have put that out of his mind. But he did not do that. The next thing he did was inquire who she was. Find out she's the wife of one of his main men, Uriah the Hittite. Sometimes we don't understand. Also, he knew that her grandfather was Ahithophel. And you may not know who that is, but that all plays a part in this. And David should have said, oh man, what am I thinking of? I can't do this. I can't approach her. I can't do it. It would be wrong for me to do this. That's what he should have done. And in Job 31:1, by the way, I want you to understand, we usually think about Proverbs 31 as the worthy woman. Well, I'm glad we have a chapter on the worthy woman. But I want to tell you there's a chapter on the worthy man, and that's Job 31. So, Job 31, that whole chapter. So, men, if you want to find out what a worthy man is, look at Job 31. And think about that. Meditate on that whole chapter. So we have to ask, were men like Job just different from the rest of us? Sometimes that's true. He was different. We need to be different. Men, we need to be different. Think about the homosexuals of Sodom and Gomorrah, Genesis 19. And the homosexuals of Paul's day, did they have no choice but to burn in their lust one toward another? In 2 Corinthians 6, verses 9 through 11, Paul says, and such were some of you. Such were, including homosexuals, fornicators, all kinds of things. Such were some of you. Now, one of the things I like to encourage people to think about, I don't care what you have been, you can be something different. Okay? You can be something different. You don't have to be what you were. You can change that. It is a wonderful thing that God has done in giving us the ability to change. So the homosexuals of Paul's day and Romans 1 in verse 27, again describing homosexuals, so we can choose what we want to be. Okay? Understand that. We can choose what we want to be. Now, there are three passages that I want to give particular attention to on this point of responsibility for lust and sin. One of them is James 1. Let no man say when he is tempted, "I am tempted of God." For God cannot be tempted with evil, and he himself tempteth no man. But each man is tempted when he is drawn away by his own lust and enticed. Then the lust, when it hath conceived, bringeth forth sin, and the sin, when it is full grown, bringeth forth death. So let no man say when he is tempted, "I am tempted of God." The point is, every step of the way is human responsibility. Every step of the way is man's responsibility to deal with. Lust, sin, and death. It's our responsibility to deal with it. As that young lady said, deal with it. It's our responsibility to deal with it. Now, that's the first passage. No, let no man say when he is tempted, "I am tempted of God." So I want you to understand that. So when you're tempted, don't say, "I'm tempted of God," because God does not tempt anybody. Now the second passage is Matthew 5, 27 through 30. The law commanded that a man should not commit adultery. However, it is not enough for a man merely to hold himself back from the physical act of adultery. You know, a lot of people, I think that. As long as I don't commit adultery, then it's okay. It's okay. No, it is not okay. It is not okay. The thinking, the lust, the obsession that lies behind adultery must also be dealt with it. And that's what I want you to understand. You have to deal with it. You have to deal with a want to. I remember when Moses was talking about the children of Israel, and they were about to cross over the Jordan, and they were going to go over there, and they were going to go into cities that had gold and idols of gold and everything like that. And what Moses says, when you go over there and you get their idols, you don't even want, you must not even want the metal on it. Here you have a god that's covered, an idol that's covered with silver or gold. And you say, "Man, I don't want the idol. I'm going to get the gold. I'm going to get the silver on it. That's all I want." Now Moses said, "Don't you even want that gold?" You see that? It's wrong for us to want the wrong thing. Not even if we say, "Well, I'm not going to get it." Do you realize it's wrong for you to want it? That's the step that we don't usually take. It's wrong for us to want it. That's where we have to learn. So the thinking, the lust, the obsession that lies behind adultery must also be dealt with. But can it be dealt with? Yes. Here's an amazing thing to me as I think about my life and the life of others. Human beings have the ability to do, with God's help, whatever He commands them to do. And that's true of you. Whatever God commands you to do, He gives you the ability to do it. Jesus dealt with the issue head on, absolute head on. Jesus said, or he talked about somebody, "But my right eye offends me. My right eye offends me So Jesus took people at their word. So your right eye offends you? Your eyes, this eyeball up here, that's not really where the thinking is. Now, sometimes we think, we do think that. But my right eye offends me. What does Jesus say? Well, if that's giving you a problem, I can deal with that. Plug it out. Now you would say, well, I don't really need to plug it out. I think I could do it. He says, if that is your problem, you're blaming it on your eye, when your eye is not the problem. But you're blaming it on your eye. So he says, if you're blaming it on your eye, if your right eye offends you, pluck it out. Cast it from you. This hand is giving me all kinds of problems. Well, it's not your hand. But Jesus takes it at face value. My hand is giving me problems. No, it's not your hand. But Jesus says, if it is your hand, then I know how to deal with that. Cut it off. Cast it from you. Now what Jesus was saying is do what it takes. All of us need to understand that. We do what it takes. Do whatever it takes. Do what it takes. Now the third passage, 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 13. This much misunderstood verse means almost the opposite of the application that is made of it. There has no temptation taken you but such as man can bear, the American Standard Version. The English Standard Version says, no temptation has overtaken you that is not common to man. And then also in the English Standard Version, God will not let you be tempted beyond your ability. A lot of times we say that if I'm tempted and I can't resist it, then it's God's fault. See, He tempted me above that I'm able. See that? That's where we make it God's fault. No, it is not God's fault. God will not let you be tempted above your ability, but will with the temptation provide the way of escape. Now, let me point out, you know what the way of escape is sometimes? Death. Sometimes it's death. Sometimes if we resist temptation, you know what we're going to have to do? We're going to have to die. Are we willing to do that? We have to be willing to do that. As we deal with life, all of us have to be willing to do that. So God will not suffer you to be tempted beyond your ability, but with the temptation, provide the way of escape that you may be able to endure. So, sin is something we must take responsibility for. And we must also take the responsibility for our lusts that lead to sin. The Bible teaches that it is possible for us to live and to deal with sin.